Hello there, guys, and welcome to another episode of Genuine Chit Chat. This week, I am joined by a man who has worn many hats in his time, Michael Dees. Now, a few quick bullet points before I get started. So with Michael Dees, he is a Vietnam War veteran. He was a practicing physician until only about 2 years ago when he had a heart attack, essentially, and had to have a quadruple bypass. And he's now an accomplished author, and his third book in the Emmett Casey trilogy has just been released, and that is called The Heretic. In the description, I've got his website that links to his books, his blog, and his sort of general life and things. And I got into contact with Michael Dees from Bruce Wozniak of Now Hear This. And I had Bruce Wozniak on episode 99 of Genuine Chit Chat. And the great Tonya Todd, who I've had on the show twice before, was also introduced to me through Bruce at Now Hear This. So there's a link to their site in the description too. A few bullet points of what we spoke about. We speak about how Michael got into writing, including a really touching story about his dad's World War II diary. We speak about some of the similarities between the main character in his books and himself, some of the artwork with his books, which are very much Celtic themed, as well as involving the Tree of Life. Novels, tattoos, introspections will come into it, relationships with our fathers, parenthood in general, Michael's quadruple bypass, the Legacy Project, which is a really interesting thing he speaks about towards the end, and then the very end of the podcast ends with a really nice heartwarming story. So this is actually probably one of my favorite podcasts I've done in probably this year. I'm not saying it's the favorite, because I've got loads of favorites, but this is definitely one of those ones up there. Michael Dees is such an interesting individual with such knowledge and wisdom. I just had so much fun chatting with him in this podcast, and I'm going to look into it and hopefully have him on again, because I'm sure he has a well of other things to talk about. But I've included all the details in the description and whatnot, so you can get in touch with him there. There's not going to be a promo today. I've been a promo for a while because I've been a bit lazy with it, but still, this is all the whole part of it. So once this chat's finished, I'll come back at the end of the podcast to talk about what's coming up, information about my other podcast, and a few other bits and pieces like that. So without further ado, thank you so much for listening, guys. I really, really appreciate it. Follow us on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook, and check out everything about Michael Dees in the description. I'll talk to you guys at the end. Welcome to Genuine Chit Chat, where we have honest conversations with interesting people. And I'm your host, Mike Burton. I am here today with Michael Dees. Michael, it's an absolute pleasure to have you on the show. Would you like to introduce yourselves to our wonderful audience?
Sure. My name is Michael Dees. I'm a retired physician who decided that he had nothing better to do, so he started writing stories. And before I knew it, here I am doing interviews and three books.
That's incredible. And, you know, you've had a very interesting life. There's so many different parts of it, which I'm sure we could focus on and just have whole massive conversations on many different aspects of it. But I'd say from a sort of starting point, would you like to tell the listeners, because I already know, about how or sort of why you started writing? Because it's a very interesting story.
When my father and I had a rather interesting and contentious relationship, he was a World War II veteran, flew in the Army Air Force. He was a tail gunner on a B-17 bomber, and started out in Northern Africa and flew 26 missions, Northern Africa to Sicily, Sicily to Italy, Italy into Germany. And life expectancy on a tail gunner was about five missions. And so we always wanted to hear what kind of a war hero he was. And his response was always, if you have to ask, if you have to talk about it, you probably weren't there. And he wouldn't talk about it. We couldn't pull the information out of him. What we knew, we learned from his brothers and his father, and but not from him. And then at the end of his life, he slipped away into dementia. And as he was slipping away, he knew he was losing his grip. And he gave me his diary that he had kept of every mission that he flew. And it was done in pencil in a little notebook. And every mission was, you know, very factual. In the air, 7 hours, 52 minutes, lost the waist gunner. Landing gear wouldn't go down, had to come in belly in, shot to pieces, have no control, no hydraulics, lost the Navigator today and the whole front turret. And at the end of every mission, at the end of his note, he would say, we go again tomorrow. And he was 19 years old. And you read these things and, you know, we're out of ammunition. We can't fight back, you know, and those kinds of things. See, I get all verklempt about it, too. But here's a 19-year-old kid. And at one point, he even says, the mission tomorrow looks bad. Looks like I won't live to see 20. And if we had read those things, my relationship with my father would have been completely different. I mean, it was hair-raising, these missions, and one after another after another. And in addition to that, if they went but they missed their target, or if they went and they got, you know, pushed off by fighters or flak or whatever, even though they flew it and even though they were over the target, they didn't get credit for the mission. And so it didn't count. And so they had to go again the next day. So there's, you know, just really hard to read. And I started to realize myself that I married late in life. I went to school to become a physician late in life. And so my children were born when I was in advanced middle age. And they had no idea what kind of a life I had lived before they came along. They always knew me as the boring small town doctor who did house calls. And so I decided that I needed to document some of those missions and episodes that I lived so that they might understand why I was such a weird little wacko. And one by one, they started turning in the chapters. And someone asked me, well, what are you working on? And I said, oh, I'm writing these things so my kids don't think I'm totally weird. And they said, well, can I read them? And I said, I guess. And so I gave her a couple of them. And she was an editor for a college university magazine. And she said, well, you've got to turn this into a linear story. This is amazing. Well, I couldn't really make it about me. And so I fictionalized it. And the character visited a lot of the places that I had. And lived a lot of the experiences that I had, but he's better looking and he's smarter and sexier.
Wonderful. And I mean, that is in itself just an incredible story. And it's one of those where obviously a lot of individuals, myself included, just on that basis, the relationship with the father and the diary and things, that is an incredible thing in itself. But if we change gears slightly, just if you want to speak about, obviously, I have notes about the third book you've got, which was just released, called The Heretic, and that's the third book. And so are all three books basically almost like slightly dramatized versions of aspects in your life, in a sense?
I think, without answering that directly, my feeling is that there's no way that you can really read a book that you don't go there in your imagination. I mean, we all have an idea of what Jack Reacher looks like in that whole mess of books. And we have ideas. And so you have to be able to paint a picture so the person is there in the scene that they're reading about. And so I didn't see how I could write about some place that I'd never been and that I only imagined. And so I set the character in places where I'd been. Well, that required that I also create the scene that I'd seen. And so in a way, the answer is yes to that. But he's a sort of an anti-hero. And I don't want anybody thinking that I'm a sexy anti-hero that always does the right thing for the wrong reason.
Fair enough. Well, I mean, speaking of travel and things, you've traveled quite a lot. Are there any specific places you've been to that in the world that really connected with you in some way? I'm always intrigued to know when people sort of travel around, if there's anywhere that they really, really like.
Well, I truly do love the Midwest and the United States. but I also love the Alps. And the Alps are just a romantic place for me. And for a while, I worked security. I was a security guard, you might say, for the ferries that ran from Liverpool to Dublin. And I kind of fell in love with Liverpool, and I fell in love with, well, the ladies in Dublin. And and did that for a season, and I would go back there in a minute again.
Amazing.
I did truly like that quite a bit.
That's lovely. And I mean, I've, funnily enough, I actually went up to Liverpool because I obviously live in the UK. I live in England, but I'm right down south, so I'm actually south of London and things. Whereas Liverpool's obviously more towards the north of the Midlands, more towards the north. And myself and my girlfriend actually went to Liverpool a month or so ago. And she'd never been. I'd been there once before. And it is, as you say, it's a wonderful city to go to. But I must say, I haven't actually been to Ireland at all yet, which I'm ashamed to say. I've been to places in Europe and things, and I've been to Wales, but I've not yet been to Scotland or Ireland. We were planning on going to each of them this year, but obviously COVID happened and stuff, so I couldn't quite.
The Night Ferry is really a fun experience.
I'll have to make a note of that.
And it's cheaper, of course, than flying. And as long as you're not doing guard duty out on the deck during a storm, it's probably really good.
I can imagine. And one thing we spoke about a little bit before we press record was actually something I had a note of and you spoke of yourself, which was the artwork of your book. Now, on social media and that sort of jazz, when this episode's released, I'll use the cover of your book in social media posts so people can see it and to kind of help with a bit. But it was sort of trees and it's Celtic in theme. I don't know if you want to sort of speak with people of kind of what they are and if either they mean something to you, you think they just look really cool, or the sort of ideas for the artwork of your books.
The answer is yes to all the above. I am unrepentantly Catholic Irish. And well, maybe not so much the Catholic, but Irish for certain. And so there is a Celtic lineage there. But the Tree of Life, which is really a Celtic and even a Nordic, which is known as Yggdrasil, which is the Tree of Life, which is the central picture on the book itself, is also in phases. It goes from green, new, all the way to autumn at the end as the leaves cross the tree itself. So there's a whole span of life there. But down below at the bottom, there are four runes, and three of them very obvious and one of them not so obvious. And one is the father, one is the warrior, and one is the healer. And as the books unfold, the runes rotate on the cover. And so each one has a different one of those three runes at the very bottom, and that is the central theme of the book, the teacher or the healer and the father and the warrior. So that's the symbolism behind it. And I actually had designed it many years ago when I was getting a tattoo that on my back, which ended up taking up my entire back, and went to a excellent artist who really embraced the imagination of the tattoo, and so did a great job on it. And so when it came time to do the books, I went back to her and I said, will you design my book covers with this? And so she did all three book covers, and she's quite remarkable and crazy, just like me.
All the best people are, don't worry. I've been described as that myself. With tattoos, if you don't mind me asking, because obviously I'm a millennial, so I'm the younger generation, and obviously tattoos nowadays are so much more commonplace. I think it's around one in three individuals under 30 now have tattoos, so it's slowly almost becoming a thing where not having a tattoo at my age is almost less common than having one. But if you don't mind me asking, how long ago did you sort of get, because you said before we recorded, I think you had seven tattoos. Nine, my apologies. And so when did you get your first one? And if it was quite a while ago, did you find it much resistance, so much stigma towards you having it?
Yeah. Yes, I did, but mostly from family members and people like that. I don't know if you can see, but I have an earring that I wear in my left ear. And I have had an earring in my left ear since 1972.
Wow.
And so it spans part of my military time. And believe me, I took plenty of heat for that. And anyway, it's just a small gold earring, and it's or a small silver earring, I'm sorry. And it's been there or in some incarnation for more than 50 years. Mm. And so I've got kind of a reputation for being a little bit out there when it comes to those kinds of things anyway. And so with my first tattoo, my wife thought that was pretty disgusting. And we've taken it from there. I did wait until I was in my 40s. Mm. And my daughter, who is 19 right now, just got a tattoo. Ooh. And we had a little talk about the fact that when you're 19 years old, you don't really have enough life under your belt to know where you want to be in 20 or 30 years. And you may really regret that tattoo, or you may want to tailor your life to fit that tattoo. So be careful. And so she went ahead and got it anyway, which is okay. I just think that when you're 17, 18, 19 years old, the peer pressure to get a tattoo is a little bit greater than whether or not you can find your ass with a flashlight. And they have a tendency to not have the experience to pick the one that's probably the smartest.
Yeah, I do know a few people who either are, I mean, I'm 26. I think my tattoo, I mean, I'm still fairly young-ish, but my pass is that it's Star Wars tattoos, which on the surface people would be like, are you sure you're going to like Star Wars when you're 80? And the answer is probably, but mainly because it's a connection to my late father, who me and him had a, he got me into Star Wars, and this, the tattoo on my arm, the sort of big blue one, that's the cover art that's been amended slightly from a video game, and he bought me the video game. So there's lots of connections with my late dad, which mean a lot to me. So it's kind of like, in that realm, oh, I can see you now. Hello. I can see it's a Star Wars thing in the background, in fact. Is that Lego Star Wars?
Oh, yeah, that's a... Oh, that's Yoda's hut.
Amazing.
It's a Legos. It's a Legos thing.
That's incredible.
That's the Beatles.
Lush.
Vintage stolen box. I hadn't even noticed that up there. It sits there all the time and never changes, so I didn't even think about it being there.
Amazing. It's funny. I only the other day, we had a Lego Millennium Falcon, which I had, like, this is our spare room, and next to me it's normally there, but we moved it to the other room. So it's annoying, I can't show you the Millennium Falcon, but anyway, sidetrack for people who are listening and things. But yeah, I love Star Wars, it means a lot to me, and I mean, wearing Star Wars pajamas, and so it's connected with my dad, but there are so many people who I know personally who have got tattoos, and then when they were like 18, 19, and now, which is only, you know, 6-7 years later, they're then like, need to get it covered up, or need to get it changed, or need to get rid of it. And it's like, yeah, well, depends on what you get, I suppose. Do you mind me asking what your first one was?
That one's easy. Just as a sidebar, way back when, I went to the initial screening of the first Star Wars movie, and snuck in for free and got in and sat in the front row because my sister was dating one of the ushers. And so he let us all in the front. And so we got to see the screening before it was even public. And not only that, on top of it, it was free.
That is incredible. I mean,
so that was
very
a
envious.
Long time ago.
Yeah, that must have been an incredible thing.
It was. I was blown away. The lightsabers. You know, you got to love that. That was before there was that kind of CGI available just off the shelf, and so that was just in awe. Of course, I was about 35 or 40 years younger than I am now, too.
I do remember my dad telling me stories about when he went and saw Star Wars and things, because he was born in 49. So I don't want to ask your specific age to our listeners, but I know that's similar-ish. But like, so he was born in 49. So when the original Star Wars came out and things, he went through, you know, he saw the three of them at the cinema and things, and he loved it. And then when the prequels came out in the late 90s and early 2000s, he was excited to show me them. So it was like a nice sort of bonding thing. But I mean, seeing Star Wars in the cinema must have been, as I said, incredible. I mean, such a cool film.
Yeah, well, you know, anytime you go to a crowd thing like that and there's this gasp of awe and, you know, all of the sound effects and everything else, and so you've got all these other people participating, pretty cool.
That's pretty amazing. Cool. So your first tattoo, sorry,
so back to your question. Yeah, that's okay. My first tattoo is on my left arm here, across here. When I was a younger man, I took up with a lot of the wrong people, and I had a bit of a criminal background, let's say. And they gave me a nickname back then. Well, they called me Little Asshole, is what they called me. And they shortened it to Hole. And I became known as Hole to just about everyone I knew for about 10 or 15 years. And so on this arm is Hole, except the O in Hole is a skull with a bullet hole right between his eyes.
Wow. That's amazing.
So that was the first one. Yeah. And I mended my ways. I've done my penance.
Well, you're an accomplished novelist now, which is, you know, you can't get much more legitimate than that. So kudos to yourself.
Oh, well.
I wanted to ask as well, sort of one of the things which I believe was a sort of common theme in your novel, which I picked up from other interviews and things that you've done, is it was mentioned he's sort of in search of himself in some sort of ways. And so that kind of gives me the impression that, obviously, as you've even stated so far, is that you've taken a lot of time to look inward at certain aspects of your life. Would that be a fair comment?
Yes. I'm looking back from the other end of the gun, so to speak, you know, down the long line of experience. And a lot of the lessons that we are taught don't really come home except in retrospect. And most of the really good lessons that we learn come with scars and stitches and, you know, heartache and different things like that. So he finally learns that what you are, what you do is who you are, and what you're called doesn't really make that much difference, because he spends a lot of time trying to live up to what people call him. And it's a balloon with a slow leak. He can never quite get there. And he shoots himself in the foot a lot while he's doing it. And so his lessons are all hurtful, but he does somehow manage to get away with it.
I mean, mistakes are probably life's harshest, but normally truest lessons in a lot of ways.
Yeah, he says in the second book that consequences are the things that common sense is made of.
Mm.
Actually, his father tells him that. And so he's busy accumulating common sense in all three books.
That's a very interesting way of putting it. And that sort of bounces off one of the things I noticed on your website as well, which was very interesting. And it was that the difference between knowledge and wisdom. And I wanted to kind of throw that at you, because I know that you've wrote a blog post about it, and I would just like our listeners just to hear what you have to say about that.
Well, we're in a society that applauds things like university education. And, you know, you got to chase the dream, graduate from high school and move right on to college, and then college isn't enough anymore. You need an advanced degree, you need a master's degree, or you need a doctorate or something like that. And as a result, a lot of these people are hitting the streets and they have not studied one day at the School of Hard Knocks. And the education starts once you have to start buying your own groceries. And so these, I don't mean to denigrate it, but I'm going to say the word kids. These people are graduating from high school, college, and advanced degrees, and they can't find their ass with both hands. And they don't have any life skills. I actually had to have my daughter's computer fixed, and I got it back to her yesterday. And I said, and she said, "Well, what do I owe you?" And I said, "Well, the battery, you know, we had to replace the battery, so it was this X amount." And she said, "Well, I don't have the cash." And I said, "Well, you could write me a check." And she said, "I don't know how to do that." And she's 19 years old. I said, "How many checks have you written before?" She said, "One." I said, anyway, I got a check, but I had to show her how to write a check. And shame on me for, you know, not including that in some of her life skill lessons.
Mm.
So, I mean, we're pumping people full of knowledge. But until you have a way of applying knowledge, you have no wisdom. And wisdom, like I said before, consequences are what common sense is made of. And wisdom is the accumulation of consequences versus knowledge. And, you know, that's how we know the stove is hot. You know, we have to touch it. But, you know, hopefully we gained enough wisdom to know that it's going to be hot every time.
That is good, yeah. And that obviously kind of explains why, for the most part, wisdom is often associated with individuals who are slightly older, because they've experienced more consequences and therefore more common sense and therefore more wisdom. So that is a very good way of putting it. And bouncing off that is, it's funny you say that, because I've had conversations with other people my sort of age and younger and etc. I moved out when I was 20, as my father, you know, passed away when I was 19, and mum wanted a new start and things, so I moved out and things like that. Obviously, my relationship with my mum is fine. It's not like that. But when I moved out,
I wasn't thinking anything different.
Just like, oh yeah, my dad passed away, mum kicked me out and I don't talk to her. It's like, that would be a very different podcast. I would be so comfortable talking about that.
That's a novel. There's a novel there.
Well, you could take that. Just write me in the right at the end, the acknowledgement. It's just like, Mike Byrne of Genuine Chit Chat gave me this, and then I'll be it. I'll be fine. But yeah, with me moving out and things, I mean, it's kind of twofold. Now, I've said this on the podcast multiple times, so regular listeners are probably sick of me saying it, but my dad passing away is the worst thing that's ever happened to me, but it's the best thing that ever happened to my character. It made me grow up and experience things, and it completely changed my perspective on countless things. And kind of intertwined with that is that because of my dad passing and I moved out, I then moved out earlier than most of my friends, apart from the two I moved out with. And one thing I did notice was that when I had moved out, some of my friends who had not moved out weren't as, maybe not mature, but they didn't view finances in the same way. And it's quite an interesting thing of, before you move out, as you say, before you buy your own groceries or things like that, you think you know. And then you actually live it and you're like, oh, no, this is very, very different to the way I thought it was going to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. As somebody said to me not too long ago, that being an adult is really all about planning what you're going to have for dinner every night for the rest of your life. and in a way that is true. You know, I look at things, you know, there were different generations that are different. Your father and I were from the same generation. My father, of course, these were the Depression people. My mother wouldn't throw away aluminum foil if her life depended on it. She recycled it constantly because she lived through the Depression. And he was back from the war before he was 20. And I was back from Vietnam before I was 20. And so the experiences, the growing up that's done in a real hurry when those kinds of things take place is a lot different nowadays, where there's so many really good options, but we don't often take the opportunity to do the options that will make us the most savvy.
Yeah. It's a very weird one, because I've kind of thought about this before with whenever I end up having kids, and it's one of those sort of, it's that weird dissonance in my mind where it's like, you know, I want to be able to provide for them. I want them to not have to worry about finances and things, and I want them to be comfortable, but equally you don't want them to be too comfortable or too spoiled or anything like that, because then, you know, you'll either hopefully not pass away too early, or if they go off and move out and things, and then they're just left with like no experience. So it's one of the things I've always sort of thought of when I'm older and things, of just when I have kids, that's that one of those weird juggling acts. And it bounces off what you said about showing your daughter about writing a check.
Mm-hmm. Well, the old expression is rags to riches to rags in three generations. And we often, you know, the parents that lived in tough times want to work really hard to succeed and give their kids everything they possibly can. And then that generation comes along and has no respect for the journey that it takes to get those things. And so they squander them. And so once in three generations, we're right back to raising a generation of children that have, you know, have to live hand to mouth. And it goes back and forth and back and forth because we don't learn. And the mistake we make is we make it too easy for our kids.
Yeah, I do remember one of the things, because when my dad was born, 49, for those who aren't as savvy with historical dates, obviously World War II ended 45, and, you know, England was still rationing and things, I think, until early 50s, to my knowledge. So he was in a family that was very, very poor. He had three siblings. He was the oldest. And my dad was a self-made man. So, you know, he had no money. He started his own business, blah, blah, blah. Kind of went from there. And towards the end of his life, he was more wealthy, which I'm very thankful for. I've got the fruits of his labor. But it was always one of those things where I kind of noticed more so after his passing, as I've gotten older, I'm like, yeah, he worked until 2 months before he passed away. And he passed away due to cancer. So he basically worked himself to death in a lot of ways. And obviously I'm very thankful for a lot of those things. But it's quite apparent looking back, which the reason for that was obviously when he was younger, he never had a lot of these things. And I specifically remember when I was a sort of early teenager, he specifically said to me, he was like, look, if there's any school trips or anything like that you ever want to go on, and they cost money or anything like that, will always be able to afford to let you go. Because when I was a kid, I didn't go to a single school trip because my parents couldn't. And that really resonated with me. It's that sort of, my dad did, he worked himself to death, essentially, just so myself and my mum could have stuff, essentially. And it's admirable, but it's also quite sad in that way. At the same time, it's that strange dissonance.
Yes. Yeah. I feel that too. You know, I did the same thing. I was lucky enough, though, by the time that I had children, I was already in practice. And so when it came to a school trip or something like that, I got to go too. So in a way, I got to do the things that I didn't get to do when I was younger. Plus, I got to do them with my kids. So that was kind of good. My dad was a great provider. He wasn't a very good father, but he was a great provider. He had learned a lesson when he was in the war that your friends get killed and you're better off not getting to know anybody. So he was just vaguely aware of the fact that there were short people running around in the house that he lived in. And I doubt very seriously that he knew the names of the neighbors that lived more than one door away. He just didn't want to. So it wasn't that he was cold. He just was his own man and wasn't the warmest of creatures.
Yeah, I mean, also with my dad, I mean, I do have two older brothers, but they were with their half-brothers. I'm very close with both of them, but they... One of them is 17 years older than me and the other one's 20 years older than me. So they've got same dad, different mums. And the way I describe how dad was when I was younger is very different to the way they describe dad was. And it's similar in that sort of regard. My dad was, he would call himself a hermit, but around people he's comfortable with, he seemed quite extroverted and quite charismatic and stuff. But all he ever wanted was just to be basically left alone with a newspaper or a good book and just sit and chill and play his guitar a little bit. So I want to ask, actually, speaking of my late father and things and his health, if you'd mind, you recently, or in your life, let's say, you've had some quite serious surgery. If you mind speaking about the bypass.
That's intrigued by it.
I was just interested, just of, you don't necessarily have to tell the story of how it happened, but just the surgery itself is quite a complex and an interesting one. I wondered if that experience made you look at things differently, or I'm not sure when you had that. So was that one of the things that contributed to the books as well, or just a general vague idea of how it kind of affected you?
Well, that is almost the most recent surgery I've had. Over the course of of my life, I've had 28 or 29 surgeries.
Wow.
I have artificial, both my knees are artificial. Both my shoulders are artificial. My left elbow is completely reconstructed. I've had all the fingers on my left hand reattached. I've been shot, I've been stabbed, I've been burned, and I'm 100% disabled veteran, service-related. You know, you get wrong place, wrong time for 10 minutes of your life, and you end up paying for it. But I had started to have some shortness of breath, and I would get really winded at work at the clinic, and I didn't understand it. And I would go in to the VA hospital, and they would say, well, you know, you have some Agent Orange in your lungs, and it's going to get worse. You might as well get used to it. Suck it up. And then a couple of weeks later, or a couple of months later, I'd do it again, and the time would get shorter and shorter. And finally, I went in over Christmas 2 years ago, and I really was short of breath. And they said, well, why don't we just keep you overnight and we'll do some tests? And they came back and they said, well, you know, you seem pretty healthy, but we're going to keep you another night. So I missed Christmas Eve, and I missed Christmas, and I missed the next day. And the next day they came in, and they came in with a whole crew. And they said, you need to call your family right now. And I said, well, you know, what? And they said, well, you have 5 blockages in your heart. 4 of them are over 90%. One of them's over 95%. You haven't had a heart attack, but we don't know why. And so we can't even send you home, and because you live alone. So we're going to keep you until we can get you ready for the surgery. So call your kids. So I called them and said, no, don't worry about it. It's going to be a couple of days, but I'm going to have this bypass and that sort of thing. Well, that night I woke up from a dead sleep in my hospital bed, and somebody had parked a concrete truck on my chest, and I couldn't even reach for the button to call the nurse. But luckily I was on a monitor, and they were in my room in no time. And I was in the operating room in about 30 minutes. I was on the table for 14 hours, and it was plenty. It was plenty. And so that was the end of practice. I couldn't practice anymore. So
that's crazy. Oh my Lord.
If I had been anywhere else, I'd have never lived. The fact that I was in the hospital in the cardiac unit is the only thing that saved my life. And the fact that I hadn't died 6 months before that is pretty amazing too. So, but then cardiac rehab, I got to tell you, that's the boringest thing you'll ever do in your life. They put you on a treadmill and tell you to walk, and you're staring at the wall or a TV that's got, I don't know what, crap on it. And so I said, enough of that. And so I checked myself out, went to my son and said, hey, he's got a landscaping business. And I said, I need to get myself back in shape after my heart surgery. How about if I start mowing some lawns for you? Well, he said, great. and now I work full time. I mow about 5-6 lawns a day, every day. And I have a great tan.
I think also, just from speaking with you in this short period of time in your life, I feel like the reason you hadn't had a heart attack before that point was pure willpower. I think that's what it was. You just, and that when you let your guard down was when you're in the hospital bed, and that's when it got you. That's the impression I get from you.
Well, I hadn't thought of it that way. Boy, I'm going to have to start paying attention.
Wonderful. I've got, there's two crossroads here. I'll ask about the physician for being a physician first. What made you, in the army, did you work in medical things as well? Or did you, and did that kind of push you towards being a doctor? Or what sort of led you down that path?
While I was in the army, I got to see a lot of medical procedures, but most of them were being done on me. I was med flighted out of country and had to come back to the States for a lot of reconstructive work. Once again, wrong place at the wrong time, but no, I in my life, I was definitely, when I got back, I literally bought into the fact that nobody wanted us to come back from Vietnam. In the United States at the time, there was an awful lot of sentiment that the war was wrong and that the people that went were wrong and didn't deserve respect or anything else. Well, I got drafted, and so I didn't get a choice. I had to go. And when I got back, nobody wanted to talk about it. Nobody wanted to hear about it. Everybody just wanted it to go away. Well, you know, scars on the outside are nothing compared to scars on the inside. And I had a hard time getting my feet back on the ground in any kind of a good way, and ended up deciding to go the other direction. And for the next at least 5 years after I got back, my life started on a really steep spiral with drugs and crime and doing some rather heinous things. And happened on a group of people who believed that you needed to find your own integrity. And the only way to find your own integrity was try to express it the best you could. And they were very attractive, and they had some pretty girls. And so I started paying attention. And over the next couple of years, I was able to rebuild some of my own sense of self-worth. And I sat down, and they were basically, you know, just, you're spinning your wheels. You know, what do you want to do? And you seem to have some gifts, and you seem to have the ability to attract people, but you can't do it where you are. Why don't you try to find a job where people will come to you that you can help? And I said, like what? And they said, why don't you become a physician? So I did the exams, and I had to go back to school just to get enough education to be accepted. And it was a long road. And probably the greatest accomplishment in my life was actually putting myself through school and making something better of myself. And that really is the point of the books.
It all loops back round. If anyone else is listening, it sounds like I cleverly strung that together, but that was not intentional. But thank you for looping that back round. I mean, that is, it's each, as I sort of stipulated at the start of this conversation to the listeners, I was like, any aspect of your life you could write a book on, have a movie on, speak for hours on end about some of the experiences within it. So it's just, this is just almost like a general overview of just the incredible life that you've lived and the true show of redemption in a lot of ways, you know, without delving too much further into the darker aspects of your past. But it's incredible that you've managed to go through, you know, the Vietnam War, of all of many of the wars as well. It's a very, let's say, difficult thing to get through, at the very least, a very difficult thing to deal with. And you managed to go through that and you come back and go down a couple of darker paths, but then you pull yourself out, become a physician, and then you obviously had the heart issue, and now you're an author. I mean, there's not really anything that can stop you in the best way possible. And it's quite inspiring, and I hope that my listeners feel similarly to the way I do, where it's actually inspiring to be able to speak with someone like yourself who has accomplished so much but wasn't... There's certain individuals I speak with on the show who are incredible and they've done a lot, but a lot of the time they've been given the correct hand to begin with. And myself, I could say that I have, to some degree, have that as well from my father. But you managed to not start at the best point necessarily, and you had hiccups along the way, but you managed to keep on going. I mean, do you think that's because of your own sort of willpower in itself? I know I joked about it earlier, but is there anything that you can maybe attribute that to, or of just being able to push through it all?
Well, I think you're assigning a lot more depth of character to me than is real.
You're not assigning enough.
Really, or exist. I got to tell you that I think the primary motivation is I just get bored easy. And so...
That's a good answer.
Well, I don't know what to tell you. I've got a friend who is a public defender, a lawyer, and a barrister for you. And she read the books, and she said, you know, I had to keep turning the pages because I could not imagine how he was going to get out of this mess. So she thought it was really interesting just from the ability of the individual to dodge the inevitable.
Mm.
The more exciting it is, the more dire the circumstances, the more challenging it was to escape. And so that catered to my short attention span.
I see. I mean, that's brilliant. I mean, we're getting sort of near the end point now. I don't want to steal too much of your time and things. But what do you have interest like to do, aside from mowing lawns and writing books? Is there anything you like doing with your free time, in a sense?
Well, first of all, I don't like mowing lawns. It's just it's just something to do right now. It's okay.
I was pulling your leg a little bit.
You know, I'm 70 years old, and so working up a sweat every day is not really, you know, my greatest thing. I love to fish, and I love to fly fish in particular. I love to fish for trout and that sort of thing. And I'm not going to do anything trite. Like, I like my spend time with my grandchildren and things like that because, you know, I am an old codger, and I don't have that kind of patience. I'm slowly approaching my father, and that I'm vaguely aware that there are short people running around. But I love to travel. I truly do. And I've got a Toyota truck that I've been driving for a while now, has 260,000 miles on it. And everything out the windshield is interesting to me. And especially if there's some really solid tunes on the radio and nobody pestering me for conversation.
Oh, I wouldn't be offended by that last one.
Oh, no.
No, I'm joking. I'm joking. I'm just pulling your leg. No, I know exactly what you mean. I mean, it's one of those things where solitude in so many ways is so... Without sounding corny, it's almost like calming for the soul, in a sense. It's just that often, just especially driving, and just as you say, listen to some great music and things, and just because America, I mean, we've got some nice sights in England, but obviously in America, you've got so many sights that are just incredible that I'm planning going to a road trip around America in a year or so, obviously delayed because of you know what going on. But yeah,
stop
some
here.
Of the places we want to see.
Stop here, and I'll show you some of them.
That would be absolutely incredible. What state do you reside in, if you don't mind me asking?
Right now, I live in Northern Illinois, which is right. I actually live right on the state line between Northern Illinois and Southern Wisconsin. So I'm just off of Lake Michigan, and I spend a lot of time up in the Northwoods in Wisconsin.
Mm.
So everything is within a day's drive.
That's incredible.
So yeah, you're welcome. Stop by. We'll break bread.
That sounds wonderful. One of the subtle things I'm doing with this podcast is the more people I speak with around the world, I'm just getting a network so that one day I'm just going to go, that's it. I've accumulated enough money and savings and just go and travel around. Because there's so many people in America that would be like, look, we had a great chat. If you're ever in an area, come by. And it's like, oh, if I can get people in every state to say that, then I could just come on a road trip to meet all of my lovely guests in person.
Wouldn't that be wonderful? Wouldn't that be great?
The dream.
The other thing I like is I got to tell you, with the exception of France, and France is beautiful. Everything in Europe from the windshield is a rolling postcard. It's so lovely, truly, it really is. And Austria probably is one of my favorite go back to places if I get back there, and that would be one that I would go to. For certain.
I do want to go to Austria. I've traveled to quite a few places in Europe, but I haven't traveled everywhere. But funnily enough, when I went up to Liverpool last month, the initial plan was to do a Europe road trip. It was going to be 2.5 weeks, myself and my girlfriend, and we were going to be going through Liechtenstein, which is a tiny little country with just castles and things that I'm desperate to see. And we drive through Switzerland to go see the Alps and things. And she's... her dad is Italian, so she's half Italian, so family in Italy as well. It's going to be a lush drive, but we're going to be doing that next year. But Austria is one of those places that we've seen pictures, we know other people who've gone there, and it's like keeps escaping our grasp in a sense.
Yeah,
so I would love to do that.
There isn't a month of the year that Austria isn't beautiful.
That's lush.
Very much. Yeah,
wonderful.
Very much.
Well, I feel like we could probably talk for hours, Michael, but it's been an absolute pleasure to speak with you. Genuinely, it has. And, you know, I'll make sure I include links in the description to where everyone can sort of find you and things like that. And I'll definitely have to have you on again to talk about things non-book related, and we could just talk about traveling and all sorts of other things, because I imagine you've got some incredible things to say in that regard. But is there any sort of final words you'd like to say to the audience before we hang this up?
I have to say that everybody has a story. And one of my projects these days is what I call the Legacy Project. And the fact that my father waited until near his death to give me his legacy that he had written down of things that I had never even suspected. And these books, in a lot of ways, embody my legacy. But so many people, especially people that get to be my age or before that, who have so much history and the things that made us who we are, not just the greatest generation, but those life-changing, character-building events that we don't share with our children and our families and things like that, partially because they're embarrassing, partly because we don't think that they're very important, but they're why we are the way we are. And so one of my projects is try to teach people to create their own legacy project that they can pass down. There's a saying that says that when we were young, our grandparents tried to tell us a story, but we didn't listen because we weren't interested. Later on, we'd wish we'd written it down. And the truth is that once we go, that history dies. You know, when someone like I do or somebody else dies, it's like a library burned down. There's a ton of knowledge. And that knowledge could be captured and just in a story. You know, sitting down having a conversation with the computer or with Mike Burton or something like that, and creating a record of this, which we can say, here, you know, you want to know why I'm nuts? Here, listen to this. And, or, you know, you want to know why I did this or that? Here you go. And so I think that's important. And in reality, these three books embody my legacy. And if you read between the lines, you know perfectly well who the guy is.
I mean, that's amazing. And this legacy project of yours, is there a website people can go to find it, or is it more of an idea?
It is an idea, but you can find more information on my own website, which is michaeldeesbooks.com.
That's wonderful. Yeah. So I'll make sure I include a link to that in the description and whatnot. And I was meant to ask about that earlier, so apologies for that, but because I did want to know about the Legacy Project. Completely evaded my mind. I mean, that is incredible. And yeah, I mean, as someone who has obviously lost someone close to them, there are, as an adult now, it's like, oh, why didn't I ask about that? Why didn't I ask about that? So the project that you're doing, I'd say is invaluable. And if more people, especially with, you know, with people's kids or grandkids who are potentially even more literate with technology, people can just connect with each other and collaborate and just record some of this life experience. This, I mean, all we are at the end of the day, like on our deathbed, we're just a collection of memories and experiences. And the more exactly. we can share with people.
Exactly. That is so true. You know, it's funny, you know, you stand in these reception lines at funerals, at wakes, and people come through and they say, oh, you did, you know, back when he and I were running together and we did this, and you couldn't imagine how heroic he was, or, you know, what he did, or, you know, and the horse got out the barn, and you stand there and you go, oh, we never knew that about that story. And so my big thrust is not just to get the stories, but to get them in the person's own voice. So that person is telling that story. I'll tell you one more thing. I don't mean to waste your time now, no, Mike.
Please do. I'd love to hear it. Please.
When I was overseas, I got a box in the mail for Christmas. And of course, it wasn't Christmas anymore. It was like middle of February by the time I got the damn box. And there was the corner of the box said, there was a great big hole where the mice had eaten into the box, and there was a piece of, there was a cake in there, or cookies in there, and the mice had eaten all the cookies and shit all over the inside of the box. And it was in the jungle, and I got a ski sweater for Christmas. And at the bottom of the box, there was a cassette tape. And on the cassette tape, the only thing on the cassette tape was my family wrapping their Christmas presents for Christmas. And so it was all my brothers and sisters, my father and mother, and my grandfather, and the dog. And each one of them took a moment to come over to the tape recorder and say, Merry Christmas, Mike. I wish you were here, that sort of thing. I can remember my grandfather came on and he said, is this Mike? We ought to take all this crap and just throw it in a gunny sack. And that was the only... That was his Christmas greeting. But I played that cassette until it broke, because it was the voices of the people I loved. And they didn't say a thing. It was just that personal. And so we can do that. It costs nothing. We can create that for our family and friends and live, you know, a lasting memory. And so before the library burns down, that's what we should do for everybody.
I mean, yeah, that's perfect. I agree with you wholeheartedly. And it's one of the many honors, honestly, of having a podcast like this, because without it, I wouldn't be able to speak with individuals such as yourself and be able to share those stories, share the memories, share the experiences and the sort of wisdom and life lessons learned. So I can't express how much I agree with you enough. It is invaluable what we can learn from each other in often the most unexpected ways, and often the most unspectacular ways as well. It's often the way.
That's fact. It's the little ones that teach the biggest lessons.
Yeah. And there's always the smallest details that make the biggest differences as well. It's all that sort of thing with perspective. But I mean, Mike, you've been so generous with your time, and you are welcome on the show anytime you want to talk about anything. I mean, I think I'm going to have you on again just to talk about fishing and traveling things, because I think that would be a great chat. It'd be sure. A lot of fun. But, you know, I'll include links to to your website and things in the description and whatnot, and, you know, all that sort of usual jazz and your social media and all the things. But, you know, obviously people need to go out and check out your book trilogy and also the Legacy Project on your website and all the other great things. And is there anything else you want to add before we hang up?
No, I've already bent your ear quite enough, Mike. Thanks very much for making it easy.
It's been an absolute pleasure. And that's the end of the podcast. Thanks as always for tuning in, guys. Be sure to check out Michael Deese's website in the description, as well as all of his books out about Emmett Casey. So coming up, I've got lots of things recorded in the pipeline, and I haven't got any more podcasts booked for quite a while yet, so I'm going to get all the ones that I've got released out, because I've had a few of them saved for quite a while now. I've got the two-parter with Janine Mercer of the Odd Entity podcast. I've got a two-parter with Scott Weatherly of the 20th Century Geek and Stories Out of Time and Space podcasts. I've got a two-parter with Jared Speed recorded, who owns a float lab as well as a fitness company and is just a really awesome guy to talk to as well. And then I've also got a one-parter, as in just a standard full-size podcast, not dissimilar to this one, with Goff of Beer Nuts Productions, who is back for his fourth time, and I actually recorded that this morning, so that was lots of fun too. So, you know, I've got a filmmaker, two podcasters, and then a guy who's sort of doing the frontier of sort of fitness and well-being and things. So really interesting lineup that we've got coming up. I haven't fully decided what I'm going to be releasing next week. I have a feeling it might be Janine Mercer, because I think we've had our chat recorded for quite a while now, so I may end up releasing that, but we'll see what I kind of fancy next week. I wanted to also reiterate what I said in the intro, which is a gentleman called Bruce Wozniak actually got me into contact with Michael Deese, as well as Tonya Todd. Tonya Todd was on last week's episode, and she was also on episode 97, I think it was. And Bruce Wozniak was on episode 99. So he has an entertainment company called Now Hear This, and he has a podcast called Now Hear This Entertainment. Well, we connected online. He was a really great guy to chat with, so obviously I had him on the show, and then I also had Tonya Todd on, and I also had Michael Deese on. I did actually have Bruce Wozniak on the show before Tonya Todd. I had him recorded before Tonya Todd, but because Tonya had an event coming up, we decided to release hers first, so that's kind of that regard. But it's really cool meeting loads of like-minded people for collaborations and just have really cool chats with. It's just a lot of fun, and it's one of the main reasons I do this sort of thing, so that's really cool too. Aside from that, I was going to say, I am actually, there's another podcast with myself in it, which is Star Wars Comics and Canon, which you may already know about, but I'm actually on an episode of something called Comics on Trial. Now that episode released today, and Comics on Trial is actually the second episode that has been released, and it is on the feed of Comics in Motion. I've done collaborations with Comics in Motion before, and my podcast Star Wars Comics in Canon comes out every Saturday on the feed of Comics in Motion. One of my favorite guests, Tony Farina, he's come on the show two or three times before, and he has a podcast called Indie Comic Spotlight on there as well, and also I've done collaborations with other people too. If you go in the description of the show notes, you'll see the episode I did with Tony Farina of Indie Comic Spotlight. I did an episode with Max Burn of Mandatory Marvel and DC as well. His podcast is on that channel feed as well. So there's lots of really cool things in that sort of regard. And Comics on Trial is essentially, they basically put up a popular opinion of a film normally being bad, and then there's basically a judge, a prosecutor, and a defendant kind of arguing, debating about the film, and it's really, really fun. The first episode was about Hulk 2003, and Tony Farina went against Chris Phelps, and Dave Horrocks was the judge. Dave and Chris are the ones who've got VHS Strikes Back and are the forerunners of Comics in Motion, and they have the podcast, which is just called Comics in Motion TV and Movies. They also do Chris and Dave's Reality Cast as well, and they've done loads of other ones too. I have a whole podcast about all the different podcasts they've been involved with, but that was a really cool listen. I will say Hulk is one of my least favourite films ever, and I don't think any argument can salvage that, but it was really, really cool to listen to Tony and Chris kind of speak about it. And what I took up to the table was I was defending The Phantom Menace against Scott Weatherly, which was a pretty hard battle, but it was a really, really fun chat. You know, you guys all know that I'm a big Star Wars nerd. I definitely do not think Phantom Menace is perfect by any stretch, but my main argument in that was that Star Wars is, especially Phantom Menace, is more so a victim of Jar Jar and overhype, more so than it being a terrible movie. I mean, a lot of people actually think Attack of the Clones is worse as well, so that's a whole nother kettle of fish. But I had loads of fun doing that. So if you already subscribe to Comics in Motion, and where you listen to me talk about Star Wars loads anyway, you can also listen to me defend The Phantom Menace against Scott. It's a lot of fun. We get quite heated in the debates, but me and Scott are good mates, so it's okay. There was no insults, no one's feelings were hurt, but we were getting quite ramped up by it because me and Scott quite like debating and that sort of thing, especially nerdy stuff we're really passionate about. But yeah, it was loads of fun. I really recommend you guys check it out. I'll try and make sure I put a link in the description to that as well. And there's future episodes coming up as well. There's going to be one about Batman versus Superman, which I'm not going to be involved with, I don't think, because I really don't like the film, but I'm not willing to watch it again to then be able to be the prosecutor, and I definitely do not like it enough to defend it. However, I'm hoping that I'm going to do, might be a little preview, I'm hoping at some point in the coming probably months that me and Tony Farina are going to go on Comics on Trial and speak about Star Wars The Rise of Skywalker. I'm probably going to be the prosecutor and he's going to be the defendant, so it's going to be quite interesting me swapping it over and actually attacking Star Wars rather than defending it, because that is what I do a lot of my time. And although I do really like the sequel trilogy and I do actually enjoy Rise of Skywalker, it's a bit fun, isn't it? That's the main thing. That's why I do these podcasts. They're a passion project and they're fun. So that's basically what you've got coming up from me. I'm basically, if you already know about Star Wars comics and canon, or you don't want to hear about it anymore, you can switch off the podcast here, but I'm just going to give a brief thing of what my other podcast is. My other podcast, Star Wars Comics and Canon, is on the feed of Comics in Motion. It comes out every Saturday. Episodes are around half an hour, 40 minutes, and it's me talking about one specific character or comic series in Star Wars. The episode I did last week was about Count Dooku, so a lot of people don't know that Count Dooku isn't his actual name. His name is Dooku. His title is Count Dooku. He didn't have that when he was a Jedi. He was just called Dooku. So I speak about his time training Qui-Gon, his time being trained as Yoda, being trained by Yoda, his apprentice called Rael Averroes before Qui-Gon. I speak about how his fall to the dark side was, his interaction with Sifo Dyas, the creation of the clone army, his age, all kinds of cool things like that. Basically a big character profile, and I link it in with one of the comics, which is the Count Dooku Age of Republic comic. The week before that I did a Q&A, so I just answered people's questions that some of you guys probably sent in, and then I also, next week I'm doing the main run of Star Wars comics. So I generally do the main run of Star Wars comics, the main run of Darth Vader comics, and then I also do the one shots, and I'm going to be going through the Age of Republic, Age of Rebellion and Age of Resistance comics, and just basically doing character profiles on specific characters, giving information about them, looking online, finding all the information I can find, as well as some of the stuff I already know. So if that sounds like the kind of thing you enjoy, and if you're either into the comics and you want more context, more information, more connections to other comics, or if you don't fancy reading the comics but you want to know some of the storylines that get entwined with them, like some of Darth Maul's story in the Clone Wars seems a bit unfinished in the Clone Wars series between seasons 6 and 7, and it actually, because of that, is because a whole arc of the Clone Wars basically got turned into a comic book called Son of Dathomir, which I believe I tackled in the second episode of Star Wars Comics and Canon. Same as how Kylo Ren got a red lightsaber, same as how Darth Vader got his red lightsaber. A lot of these things I have tackled in the podcast, so make sure you go check those out. Anyway, that's enough of me rambling, guys. Thank you always, as always, for listening. I really appreciate anyone checking out the show, especially listening this far in, right to the end, where I'm running out of breath because I'm talking so fast. And yeah, I just really appreciate it, especially because I've now hit the 100th episode milestone, and you guys are all fantastic. I really appreciate you guys listening to this show and to Star Wars Comics and Canon. I appreciate all of you. I appreciate everyone getting into contact and recommending me guests and having all that sort of jazz. And this podcast is just so much fun, and it means a lot to me, and it brings a lot to my life, and I feel like it's valuable. It brings value to me. So for any of you guys who listen, just thank you. And make sure you go check out all the amazing guests we've had on here, because pretty much all of them are really, really incredible people. So anyway, that's enough of me. Thanks as always, guys. Find us on the usual social media places, and I will talk to you all next week.